Welcome to the How I Got Here podcast. We all know that each person carries within him a story of how he got to the place he is today, to what he's doing today, to where he finds himself waking up, in what country, in what profession. And on the surface, it may seem like, ooh, he was born into it, or ooh, his parents told him what to do. But I think that every person really comes with a story of their own. And in this podcast, my goal is to uncover that story and to share with you, my dear listeners, the ups and the downs and a little bit of the fabric of who this person is and what he did to get to where he is today. Because sometimes it's not the final result that makes the story so great. Sometimes it's the journey itself. And that's what I'm here to share with you. Enjoy, Chana Rachel. Good morning. I'm so excited. Today I'm interviewing Ida Schottestein, who is the head of Multi-Role Woman, a platform that enables women to connect and also find ways to live a productive and healthy life. And I'm going to hear today a little bit more from Ida, who she is, and a little bit more. So enjoy.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm good. I'm starting this new juice cleanse with a lady next door. She told me about this like detox. You drink juices for 1 week and it restarts the whole system. So like I've only been drinking juices like all since Sunday, and like it's crazy. It like really changes your moods. It's crazy.
Just juice, nothing else? No food?
Just juices. It's called the Beyonce diet, apparently, because she did it for like one of her roles for like one of her videos. And it's just supposed to like jumpstart all your system so that you can actually like start tasting flavors again. And it's really cleansing. Like you feel energized.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like I feel like a smoothie might maybe work, like, cause then I'd be able to throw in some almonds or something, like some protein, but just the juices. That sounds like, it's interesting. It's interesting that you have energy, because I would feel like, I would assume that you'd be depleted of energy because you're not taking any proteins or carbs. It's so cool.
Yeah. No, I think initially, like you feel maybe a little bit weak, but now I'm starting to feel really energized. You know, I think also the reason that it's happening is because like fruits have so many nutrients inside of them. And when you like squeeze them and drink them right away, there it's like all the vitamins, like it's not even sitting out to oxidize. It's just pure nutrients. And it's different. Yeah, you should try it.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe one day. Sounds interesting. Definitely yeah. Sounds interesting.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So thank you so much for taking from the time to sit with me today.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
So I was like looking through your website. You have this multi-role woman, and I was looking at all the different things that you offer. You have these books that you wrote. You have the podcast. You play beautiful music. And I see that like your mission really through this site is really like to empower women to live a healthy and productive life. So I wanted to know like from you, like how you hope on doing that through the multi-role woman.
Right. So yeah, the website is one way that I am sort of in line with my mission. I feel like I have one, like a driving force almost. I have this underlying mission of wanting to help, first of all, wanting to do my part in the world, use whatever energies, talents I have to make a difference. And whatever that looks like the how part can be anything from giving a workshop to writing an article and sending it to, you know, a newspaper, my podcast, writing a children's book, and even like being in school, like studying psychology, mental health counseling, so that I can become more knowledgeable in how to become a better person, how to help people with like research back tips. So it's really, to me, it's not so much the how, and it's funny because people often ask me like, oh, what do you do? And I have such a hard time answering the question because I do a million different things. It's just, I would prefer, the question almost like, you know, who are you? What's important to you? I think we should all ask that question, you know, like what's your why? Yeah. Like the why. So my why so is, you know, I really truly believe in the power of connection, of shared experiences, of having like real conversations, of sharing what we know with each other. Because a lot of people are feeling like, oh, what do I know? I'm not an expert. Why would people want to listen to me? And I actually did feel that way. Like, why? I'm not a mental health expert. Now I'm more of an expert because I've done the work. But before, when I launched the website, I wasn't. But I knew I had some things to share. And I thought, look, I'm not forcing anyone to visit the site. I'm not forcing anyone to listen to the podcast. But I feel like if somebody wants to, it's there. And what's happened is amazing. You know, it's really like it's grown a lot. And so, yeah. So, I mean, I guess I don't know if that answers your question specifically, but I definitely have a mission. And whatever that looks like day to day, I'm willing to do so long as I'm, you know, able.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. You're saying it's not necessarily about giving tips on how to juggle them, but kind of like almost giving them like a mirror into your life and kind of like through your thoughts about things and just like through different insights that you're having throughout your journey. That's how you're like spreading your light and connecting.
Yeah, because I feel like we're all much more alike than we are different. So, and then that's why it's so important to have conversations, because often what happens is like people will say, oh my gosh, that's so funny because I totally feel the same way.
Right.
And then we realize that, you know, this is a universal thing that we're dealing with here. It's not like that, it's just that person, not me. Like I could totally find a point of connection with most of the women that I speak to. And I think it's because I'm not a fully open book, but I'm certainly willing to have like important conversations.
I like that. I like what you're saying. It sounds like you're also juggling lots of different things, like being a wife, being a mother, being also like, you know, working on your own business. I'm curious to see like what it's like versus my life. Like I'm not married yet, but Barisha one day and I'll have kids too. But like, I'm trying to think of like what roles in my life, like I'm juggling right now. Whether it's just like, you know, being a Jewish woman and just being also having my own business. But mm-hmm. How do you think you connect to like other people that aren't necessarily like in your like status in life? Where do you find the connection like with people?
So I guess, I mean, I don't naturally connect to everyone. That's really the truth. Like I can't say that I could connect to anybody, but I think, you know, when I launched the website, multi-role woman was very apropos because I think that naturally brought other multi-role women to the platform, other women who are like-minded, who have a lot going on, who are looking for ways to handle a daily juggle, you know, to manage the daily juggle. So I think that what naturally happened is that those are the people that I gravitated to, and those are the people who gravitated to me. So I think in that I found a lot of shared experiences, maybe naturally, because that's really what I'm offering. So yeah. I feel like like someone who doesn't share my, let's say, lifestyle, or you know, who maybe is from like a different part of the world, who doesn't have the same kind of struggle I do, maybe wouldn't end up having the conversation with me. But the people that I've so far spoken to, who have, you know, listened to my podcast or been to my workshops, again, they came, so they came for a reason. I've found so much connection there, so a lot of.
Do you see like something, an underlying factor that most of these ladies share in common in like the way they live their life or like habits that they do?
You mean like when I meet them?
Yeah.
When I meet them, I think that most of them, from what I understand, are looking for a way to improve their lives and to better manage their lives and to be happy, I guess, happier. You know, I think that's the universal goal. And I think that the fact that it's a goal is part of the reason why it's not being met, because in and of itself, it can't be a goal, but that's a whole nother conversation. But really, I think that I'm saying we're, because myself also, we're looking for more contentment, peace, you know, clarity, focus, yeah. all those things.
It's so funny that you're saying that because just yesterday I bought this booklet by Times Magazine. It's called Joy. I suggest to pick it up. It's out for like another 2 weeks or so. They talk about joy in like different religions, and they say like in the Egyptian religion, they say after you die, you go up and like in the decision, if you're going to go to heaven or, you know, the other alternative, they ask you, did you bring joy and did you find joy? And I think that's something that's like really interesting to think of, because it's like, you know, we're all so busy reaching our goals and, you know, accomplishing these different things. And I think like joy is also one of those big roles, like, you know, like what's it all worth if you don't find joy within everything that you're doing? You know what I mean? And it's so interesting because also they said here in this magazine that, like, for example, Indians in the Indian culture, they find more joy in serenity and in peace, as opposed to the American culture that for them, like, joy is this like a louder thing of just pure joy and happiness, you know? So it's really interesting how different people define their own joy. It's great to be surrounded by people who you feel are all striving to have that joy. I guess that is a driving force.
It is. And I think a lot of people assume that joy is in the outcome. Like, I'm working toward this goal and I'll feel happy when I get there. I think it's also important to make the distinction between like joy and pleasure, because joy involves some level of discomfort and hardship and challenge. Like, you have to be able to, if you want to meet a goal and be present, right, which you can do, absolutely, you have to, you don't have to, but it's feeling joy every day, right? Making each part of that journey meaningful is so important. And I think that knowing that it's going to be hard and we can still find joy in it, it's very important. And I think that with pleasure, it's more like, hey, what do I want right now? And will I give into it? It's what you're doing now, that juice cleanse, you know? Yeah. I mean, you made it sound pretty easy, but I mean, I feel like if I were to do that, right, and it sounded very exciting, sounds tempting. And if I were to do that, it would, you know, that's a good example of recognizing that it might be great at the end, but that's not my only thing. I have to be able to feel joy in the process, right? Like right now I'm on day 3 of this juice cleanse and I'm really like seeing the benefits like right now. And by the way, the benefits are more like you, I don't know, I'm totally just guessing here, but sounds like once you're done with this cleanse, that's when you really see what it does, right? You've done the whole thing and then you see the result. But it sounds like you're also seeing joy in the process. But anyway,
I am seeing joy in the process. Something that I'm feeling throughout like the past 3 days is that I'm just not thinking as much as about things. Like, I'm taking things a little bit lighter. I'm not like dwelling too much. Like, if something happens, I'm just not like, oh, that didn't go the way I wanted it to. It's giving me this very light feeling of, of just being light about things. And I strongly recommend, for anyone who's like listening, also for you, I'm curious for you, and also Rivka, I'm curious what Rivka's gonna say about this. So you should check it out. And I remember also when I met with you, I asked you like, what kind of things do you do that like you feel really help you uplift your life? And I remember that you said, like, when you have an intention, like you do the best that you could do. And then the rest, you just like leave up to Hashem. So like, I was wondering also, like, if you have like some other ways of being or like other tips that you do like in your life, like habits that you do that you feel really enable you to be this multi-role woman.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the way that I have changed right now, that I've come to a place where I have a lot going on and I am managing for the most part, is really through the little things that anybody can do. Yes. Anybody. My 10-year-old daughter can do it. My husband can do it. I mean, it's not limited to any, you know, gender, culture. I mean, anything. It's just doable. So, and those things are things like charging my phone away from my bed where I can't reach it.
Amazing.
And that translates into better sleeping habits, showing up more because I've slept well. I mean, all these, like, you know, they're called stacking habits. They're the little things that we think are kind of insignificant at first, but then we realize that, you know, they have these crazy ripple effects in other areas. So that's just one tip that I love. I journal, also very underrated, very researched.
How often do you journal?
I journal every morning, every morning. So I slightly hesitated because my journaling right now is brief. My goal for this year is to make it more of a process, like to contribute more time, because I've seen what it has done. And so now I want to, and I just heard on this podcast recently, forget which one it was, but the person was saying that however long you journal for 5 additional minutes, and you might find that you have writer's block, like you don't even know what to write. But if you wait a little bit, then it will come. So I haven't tried that yet. So I can't really, you know, state that as something that I do, that's a tip, but I've heard that it works. So I'm going to try it and see, but the journaling is great. And then waking up an hour before my kids do, or even just waking up a little bit earlier for someone who, let's say wakes up, well, unless you're waking up very early already, but let's say you wake up at 8 normally, wake up at 7:30 or at 7 and use that hour, because this is an additional hour. So you can't really make the statement that, okay, well, I'm so busy, I have no time. If you're waking up an hour earlier, that means that you're buying yourself time. And that's time for you. The first hour of your day is probably the most important. It jumpstarts your day, it sets the tone. So starting it, especially if you're busy, giving yourself a little more time starting it earlier can make a huge difference. So those are like 3 things. I can share more, but I think those are like the fundamentals for me. Is journaling. First, yeah.
Right. So it's journaling, keeping your phone away from where you sleep.
Yeah.
And what else?
Journaling, keeping my phone away from where I sleep, and waking up. Well, I already wake up early now, so I'm not waking up any earlier than I do.
Right.
I set my alarm for 5:30, but I've been waking up at 5. Sometimes even earlier.
Oh my God. So what, you go to sleep at like 10? What time do you go to sleep?
Yeah, I'm usually sleeping by 10. Sometimes 10. If I, you know, sleep is very, very important to me. It's a higher priority than waking up early. So if I go to bed after 10:45, if I go to bed by 11, at 11 o'clock, I'm not waking up at 5. I need to get between 7 and 8 hours. So this is not an everyday thing, but for the most part, yeah, I woke up at 5, get a lot done.
That's amazing. There is something true about like waking up earlier and you kind of feel like you have a jump start to the whole day. And it just sets the tone. Like you feel like, yeah, you're ahead of everyone. So, okay. So let's say you wake up at 5 a.m. What does your first hour of the day look like?
So that's a good question. No one's ever asked me that before. Okay. So I wake up, I grab my journal, I take my laptop and my phone, put it on my dining room table. That's my workspace. Make a coffee. I usually have a coffee first thing in the morning with a cinnamon bun, which that's a habit. If I do the juicing cleanse, I'm going to have a very hard time breaking that. But, I have a coffee and normally I'll start with my journaling. That's the first thing I do. I actually have it right here. It's like a book. I write down everything that I've got going on that day. I write down 3 things that I'm grateful for.
Wow.
Let me go in order. So first I write down 3 things I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
Which by the way, if you do this for 21 days, you will notice a change in the way that you think. It's really amazing. I write down 3 things I'm grateful for. I write down my schedule for the day. This is like a goal. I haven't been able to do this, but I put down, I have a journal that I created. I started it. I created it for myself and then I ended up sharing it. And then I ended up publishing it because people were asking, for it. It's very simple. It's 3 things I'm grateful for. And then there are like 1 hour increments the entire day from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. And I just write down what I'm doing. I have to fill in those slots because if I don't, then I end up wasting time. And when I say wasting time, I don't mean that I have to be busy, busy, busy all day. I just feel like I have to be intentional. I could be going to the beach for an hour and sitting and watching the ocean, right? And doing nothing else. But only if that's what I intended to do. Meaning if I'm supposed to be organizing the closet and then I decided I'm too lazy and I want to go to the beach, see, to me, that's kind of like, wait a minute, why are you committing to something but doing something else? So just writing down everything I'm doing. And then the goal is, remember, I want to add an additional component, which is just free writing, just to free write. And yeah. So that's something that I'm hopefully going to start doing. And then after I'm done with journaling, that's when I do, you know, depending on the day, every day is different. So like Wednesday is podcast prep day. So Wednesday I prepare the content for our podcast that we're going to record. Sometimes I do that Tuesday also, if we have a lot of prepping to do. Some days I read, I love reading articles, just new research on current issues, psychology. I do a lot of research on ADHD, different mental health stuff.
Yeah. I heard that you are an expert in like ADHD and that you studied psychology and that you say yourself, you have ADHD.
Yeah. I mean, I don't consider myself an expert because I think, you know, there's that quote, the more you learn, the less you know.
Right.
So the more I learn about it, the less I realize I really know. It's a lifelong journey for me learning about the nature of ADHD. But I do know enough to be able to help other people whose lives have been impacted by it. So that's what I do. I do a lot of coaching and workshops on that particular topic.
Great. So what kind of like article did you read lately that you found really interesting?
So the last article I read was on why New Year's resolutions don't stick.
Okay.
So yeah, it'd be very interesting, very apropos. So I get like, I have email subscriptions for different like magazines. I have a subscription for like Thrive Global, Psychology Today, Attitude, which is a magazine on ADHD. So whatever comes into my inbox, I just kind of will click it if it's interesting to me.
Right.
So I was curious to know why most New Year's resolutions don't stick, and so interesting. We're actually doing our next podcast episode on, you know, what are the things that helped us make our year great?
Yeah.
Well, as great as it could be under the circumstances, but what are the things that we know, can be helpful. But yeah, so that's the last article I read.
That's so interesting. I think the reason that New Year resolutions don't work is just because the year is really long and no one's following up with you on like all the things. And also number two, if you don't quantify your resolutions, it's impossible to reach them. So like, for example, last year, this was one of my New Year resolutions, but I think I didn't write it down properly enough because, okay, my New Year resolution is when I send messages, I always want to reread the message before I send it. Because Ida, you've no idea how many times like spell check, it literally makes things embarrassing, like spell check. And then like random characters that go in there also like sending messages to the wrong people. Like they're, and you don't understand. And like, and it does, it really lowers the level of the message you're trying to get by. So that was like 1 year resolution I tried doing. And just like other ones, I don't know. I feel like the only way to really make the resolutions workable is if like you really break it down to small things that you can really accomplish. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like you read the same article I did. That was, so one of the things was they're called SMART goals. If you want your goals to stick, they've got to be specific, measurable. They have to be a specific span of time. Like there's like a method to making sure that your goals are met for the year. So that's one of them, is to make sure it's specific and also doable and realistic, right? Yes. If you're going to have a goal of, if someone has a goal of, let's say, you know, oh, I want to, you know, lose 30 pounds, right? That's not specific. Yeah, it's specific to an extent, but well, what's the breakdown? You know, my breakdown would be start taking the steps instead of the elevator. That's realistic,
right?
You know, in my building. So that's something that is more likely to get accomplished, is when you break it down to the smallest possible steps that make it kind of hard to not do, because it's just a small thing. It's like putting a charger near my, you know, away from my bed.
For sure. Yeah. Sure.
It's those things. And by the way, my goal would have really been, if I was thinking bigger, to just get better sleep, you know, to sleep better. So I'm actually indirectly doing that.
Oh, really?
And making it specific. Yeah.
There's this documentary on Netflix. It's called Ask the Doctor. Check it out. So it's great. So yeah. This 18-year-old student that's suffering from studying. She can't sleep at night, and it's affecting her studying. And they gave her this whole routine of how to go to sleep at night. They said that she should 2 hours before she goes to sleep, not look at the phone. She's supposed to listen to relaxing music before she goes to sleep. Take a bath. I can't remember what else it was. But yeah, they really set this routine for her, and she really started feeling after a while that she was just getting up earlier in the morning. She was just more on top of things, better grades. It's very connected to your well-being.
Yeah. And so the way, if I was working with someone, I would just have them do one, just the one thing. If they feel overwhelmed by it, either just the bath or just the phone thing. And then usually one thing will lead to another. It's kind of like when you work out in the morning, you're much more likely to have a healthy snack after, once you've done the workout, one thing will lead to another.
Yes.
So that's the mind, that's the thinking behind it.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Speaking of exercise, I don't know, you seem really it seems like you're managing and you're on mood, you have a great balance of your moods and you have everything together. What's your relationship with exercise?
The key word being it seems that you do.
Yeah.
I'm all about being open and honest. And I think that I would be lying if I said that I'm fully balanced in my moods, because I do wake up sometimes feeling lethargic or feeling I'm just not in the mood of getting, getting my day started. So I'm doing the best I can with what I have, with my brain, with my body, with my, even genetics. I mean, Eastern European Ashkenazi, that comes with some baggage too. So there's all this stuff. I know that there are ways to maximize your day. And what's interesting is that I find, a lot of people ask me, how do you do so much, right? How do you manage such a busy, hectic schedule? And what's so interesting is there's this quote, if you ever want to get something done, ask a busy person. So I find that the more I have going on, the more I get done, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Before I launched Multiple Woman, before I was in school, everything, I used to ask my husband to do everything, and he did it. Even though he was so busy, anything I asked him to do, he got done. And I wasn't, and I had tons of time on my hands. So it's interesting how now I have less time, but I get more done. So what I found is that's the thing. I do a lot by doing a lot, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And also remembering to do the important things, getting good sleep and resting and making sure that I keep my priorities in line. I have to know what's most important to me, right? What do I have to compromise? I don't like the word compromise so much, but what do I need to kind of reallocate, let's say recalibrate? I want my family to come first. What does that mean? I might have to give some things up, but it's a little something somewhere in between feeling I'm productive and also having my priorities in line.
Yeah. If someone were to ask you, Ida, what are your priorities from 1 to 5? How would you rate them?
There's no question that my top priority is family, is my family, is my husband, my kids. And then aside from that is making sure I show up for me, and I'm being my best self. And if that means that sometimes I need to go for a walk, right, and not, let's say, spend as much time with my kids, then I know that's okay, because ultimately the bigger picture, right, is what I have in mind. I want to show up. I want to be the best, version of myself. And I don't know if I'm going to remember this, but I read this mom blogger wrote something so good. She said, I'm not taking care. It's not self-care at the expense of my kids. It's more self-care and my child's care. It's not either or, it's both. Meaning it's not really a sacrifice. If you're taking care of yourself, you're not sacrificing your children in any way. You're actually enhancing everybody's lives, yourself. And they're I butchered that. I would love to be able to find it. I just have no idea where it was. If I find it, I'll send it to you. Yeah. But it was a great quote. But yeah, I mean, you know, taking care of me and taking care of my kids. And then after, beyond that, making a difference, making sure that I show up for people who need me in the best way I can, learning how to say no.
It's really
when I need to. Yeah, I mean, priorities, like, they change also over time, you know, like my priorities, literally, they change day to day. I have my fundamentals, but yeah, I'm evolving.
Yeah, it's a process. Yeah. I think there are certain things that you do them, not necessarily, you do them that take time, but they don't take away time. It's like a recharge, they recharge you. They make more time in the day. Like, for example, the way I see exercise, I see when someone exercises, they have more energy. Also, the quality of what they're speaking, the quality of their minds are sharper. So, like, they end up accomplishing a lot more. I think it's also very related to, like, you and your self-care, like how it's having self-care and taking care of the kids. Like, it's not things that enable you. You don't see it automatically, but they do. Over time, you see they do.
Right, right. Yeah. It's like I love the analogy of the pie. You know, like when you have pieces of a pie, right? You take one piece out and then you have less pie. A lot of people equate that concept with life, right? If I take, if I spend time with this person, then I'm losing the time that I need to do this other thing. But that's not really how it works. It's like, if I spend time with this person, I'm actually building the energy reserves that I need that will make me be able to do this other thing, right? With more vigor, like with more energy, meaning you're building energy reserves by expending energy. That's really what it is. Mm. It's like you're using up energy, but you're not losing it. You're actually gaining it. And anyone who does something that they love, like when you're really, really in the zone, doing something you enjoy so much, right? Even if it takes work, you somehow, like, you build up this energy reserve that you may have not known that you had before.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's interesting you're saying that. I believe that being present, fully present in what you're doing, I think that's the biggest source of energy. I don't know where I read this exactly, but they said, like, whenever you're in a conversation and you're not fully in it, you're not fully listening, you're actually burning more energy because, like, you're just hearing extra noise in your mind as opposed to actually fully listening and, like, you know, taking in what the person is saying and then giving them, like, a real genuine answer. Like, that's the best way to gain more energy, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Interesting. And also, I had a thought for you before I forget. So I really like your idea of the journal that you do every morning with the three things you're grateful for and then the hours. I think it would be cool as part of the multi-role woman to have a journal that you sell with that format.
So I do. I actually do have one.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Because I initially used it with my own clients. Like, I just put it together for them. But now it's available on Amazon. It's there. I still use it. And yeah, it's great right now. So right now I'm not using that particular one because I don't have any more. I gave them all away. I did have, but now I don't. So now I'm using something else, but it's a 21 day thing. It's a 21 day. It's almost like a challenge. Like, if you do this for 21 days, then, and my goal is that a person shouldn't have to keep buying that journal. It's like, you do this journal, and then once you're done with it, you'll know what to do, because I want you to make it your own. It's not.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what I did. You know, I think it was around a year ago. I built myself a format of what I do. So every single day I have everything I'm doing for the day. And then on the top, it's like a mindset of what I want the state of mind for my day to be. And then I do, in the end of the day, Ida, I do three amazing things that I had in my day, like my three favorite parts that, like, really touched my heart. You know, like, I don't know, there was a duck that passed by. Well, right now there's, like, a little rooster next door. He's passing by. I love the rooster. So, like, every time he passed, like, I got really excited. So three small moments you really loved, and then three things that you can improve for tomorrow.
That's great. That actually is from
Masila Isharim, something called Cheshbon Nefesh.
Yeah.
Sit down and you think of, like, how you can improve yourself for tomorrow, and then on the side, it's like a movie or an article that I want to read or a podcast I want to listen to. And then the following day, you kind of reevaluate like everything that you accomplished, didn't accomplish, and then you like carry on, you know? So that's how I did it for myself.
That's beautiful. I love that. I think I'm gonna start doing that. The end of the day thing. What was great. Yeah.
It's very easy to set goals and to like have good intentions, but if you're not following up on yourself, I'm sure just like you, any successful business person needs to follow up with what they're doing, you know? Leading to, actually, I wanted to talk with you also about, so you and your husband is known as this serial entrepreneur. He's like really all over the place and you guys are really cute. You're like two like Jewish celebrities, like always like traveling from one place to another. Like, I don't know, like, how do you do it? Like when he's like, okay, hey babe, let's fly to New York. And then you're like, wait, like, how does that, tell me like that side of your life. What does that look like?
Yeah. So we're not traveling as much now, but it looks like it's kind of like the same philosophy of if you want to get something done, ask a busy person, but combined with the values. So what I mean is, okay, I'll give you an example. Let's say he's saying, okay, tomorrow let's go to New York, right? I've got this thing, you want to go. And generally I want to go, I enjoy it. It's important. I think it's nice to spend time with my husband. We used to travel a lot. So it was sometimes like tiring, like it was exhausting to travel a lot and then to come home and then to really have to kind of restore and reboot. But I would say the questions I ask myself, you know, I'm trying to be an intentional person, like showing up for everything. So if I'm intentional showing up, I'm asking myself, okay, can I do this first of all? Cause I have school, I'm in graduate school too. So I've got school, I've got class. If there's class that night, it's just a simple, like, I just can't do it. Well, now it's on Zoom. So sometimes I could. But so once it's logistically possible to do these things, then I have to say, okay, well, my priorities, right? My kids, my husband, both priorities. So that's interesting, you know, and for someone, you know, who is wanting to be a great spouse and a great parent, you know, that's something that needs to be better understood, is like, what's my role as a spouse? What's my role as a parent? What's my role as an individual? You know, what are my responsibilities to myself also? So it's like, it's factoring in all those things. I personally believe that when kids see parents who enjoy each other's company, who want to hang out with each other, then that gives them a sense of peace. You know, more so than when a parent says, I can't go, like, let's say if I were to say, I can't go with Tati because I feel bad to leave you guys. I don't know that I'm doing them any service. I don't know that I'm doing them, you know, any good, as opposed to telling them, you know what? I love you guys. Like, I love hanging out with you. And I genuinely do. Like, they're so awesome. But, you know, I love hanging out with Tati. Tati's going to New York. I'm going to go with him because I think it's important for us to hang out and spend time together. You know, that's just one example. Obviously, you know, to not overdo it, kids still need their parents and I still try to be there as much as I can. But at the same time, I totally get that a good marriage is, to me, a top priority. In some ways, and I hope no one takes this the wrong way, but in some ways, even over being a good parent, because I think naturally, if you're a good human and a good spouse and you care about your partner, I think you're naturally being a good parent by default, by doing those things. Mm-hmm. That's how I do it. Is I ask, first of all, is it logistically even possible? Once it is, then I go to the next step. Okay, well, does it make sense? You know, if my daughter has a production that night, right? I'm not missing that.
Right.
So I'm telling my husband, look, I this is her night. It's her production. Usually it's women only at her school. So that works. She hasn't been in a production yet, but I know she will be once they start doing that. But that's just a hypothetical. But yes, I would not show up to something that's important to my child because I just want to hang with my husband. You have to kind of know as you go along what makes the most sense.
Right.
So there's no one size fits all.
Dating. Like lots of like, you know, it's not just, okay, let's go. Like you need to like have your calculations of what you can miss, what you can't. So.
Right. I try not to overthink it. It's hard not to. Like I overthink everything, but.
You definitely need to have this juice cleanse. I'm telling you, you don't think as much.
I feel like once I commit to something, I've got to really follow through. So I would have to be in like the right place. Cause you know, I can't imagine myself making dinner and not eating it. So I maybe like on vacation, you know, in the summer.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. The next time your husband takes you to somewhere for a week, you'll be like, under one condition. Yeah. Just make sure.
I'm just trying to cut gluten. I've been trying to cut gluten and dairy for my diet. It's been very hard. I haven't been able to do it yet, but you know, that's a goal.
I think gradually is the best way. I try not to eat dairy either. I think milk itself is really like bad, but like maybe ice cream is like better. It's processed differently actually, so like you feel it differently. But dairy and gluten, wow, that is a big commitment.
I've been told by my doctor to limit dairy and gluten in my diet for various reasons. So I should be doing it. I substitute half of the milk that I put in my coffee with oat milk. And there's a really good oat milk that I get at Publix. I forget what it's called. Shoot. It's really good though. Oat milk is, if you get the right one, it can be delicious.
Really?
My daughter eats it with her cereal now, and she doesn't even have to cut out dairy. She just likes the taste.
Ever since I got to Miami, everyone's talking about this oat milk. Is it like a trend?
It's got to be that same one. It's got to be that.
Okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It comes in a carton.
Yeah.
I think I know which one. I personally love the almond milk. The bottles in America, they're so beautiful. They come like shaped like this.
Oh yeah, that's Califia Farms. That I know because I've been drinking. Yeah. I use it in baking.
Yeah. Interesting. I wonder what's less fat, the oat or the almond milk.
I would guess the oat milk, but I could be wrong.
Something for you to talk about with Rivka.
I think you should speak to her. I think she's I mean, a lot of the questions you're asking me, I think she is like so good to answer them. Okay. Especially like with like the cleanse and we always have these conversations, but I should introduce you.
That's a good idea actually. Okay, and then the last topic I wanted to ask you is you're Chabad. Okay. And like, I've been meeting so many Chabad ladies here in Miami. I've also been involved in Chabad in Israel and Tel Aviv and stuff, but like here I'm meeting a lot of Chabad. I'm slowly like learning more about it and like the importance of the women wearing a wig and like, you know, doing like shlichim and always doing work for the community. And like, and the idea that I'm getting in my mind that is that Chabad naturally paints the women as being this woman that's more like quiet behind the scenes, you know, like while her husband is the one that's shining. And like, and I wanted to know more from you, like how you associate with Chabad and how you feel about not necessarily being like so hidden and behind the scenes.
Right. So what's interesting is that I personally, from my experience in Chabad, I'm not a shlucha, but my parents are shluchim. My mother is and was behind the scenes, but not because it was a social convention. Like it wasn't an expectation. She just happens to be a more modest and quiet person by nature. Mm. So I find that in Chabad, the women that I know are very much like out there, lamplighters, going out and, you know, making a difference and definitely not encouraged to be quiet. And although I really do believe it's more of a personality thing. And also, I also believe that there are channels for different energies. So I think that the Chabad women really all women that I know who are outgoing, they go out there and they're outgoing, maybe in certain sectors, like in certain spheres, different in different environments. So for example, I have a friend of mine who's a Rebbetzin, and she's very outgoing, and she gives classes to women, and she reaches out to people, and she's like I would call her a public figure.
Yaffa?
Not Yaffa. Her name is Sarah. I don't know. So she's really, really great. I mean, one of the most outgoing people I know, and she just happens to be a Chabad shlucha. So I think that it might be a misconception that Chabad women are meant to be quieter. Obviously, there's that element of modesty, of tzniut, which is definitely there. But I think that that doesn't preclude a woman from reaching out and being a lamplighter. It's kind of like saying, you know, you could be conservative, right? But outgoing at the same time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I like,
I'm not sure. Yeah. I guess, this is just my own experience. Like, I see Chabad women as the opposite of having to stay behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Many of them do just, I guess, maybe naturally because they have kids and they're just, you know, maintaining the house and taking care of their kids and like making sure that that stuff is running, which I think that's a lot of women, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of women take on like a few extra things than their husbands. That's totally a general statement. I'm just, from what I've seen, you know, like, I guess now, I had my children, like, I'm pregnant. When I'm pregnant, I'm, you know, it's definitely something that is very, you know, it drains my energy definitely a lot. And there's a lot going on, I think, for women. And I think I tend to veer off, but to answer your question, I think I'm so inspired by Chabad women. I'm inspired by women who are into outreach, who go out there and work and try to make a difference in the world, while at the same time taking care of their families. Many of these women are in places that don't even have schools for their kids, and they're also educating their kids at the same time. And I interviewed one woman on my podcast from Nigeria. She's the Chabad Rebbetzin in Nigeria, and she's just fascinating. I mean, unbelievable what she does.
I think I listened.
Also,
In Tel Aviv, there's Sarah Nidich, also a Chabad Shlucha from Chabad on the Coast. She opened up a whole Chabad school.
Like, it's amazing. It's amazing what Chabad is doing around the world.
Yeah,
really blown away. Right here around my corner too, in Bell Harbor. Like, incredible. The Shul of Bell Harbor. Like, it's a very, very special place to live.
Are you in a Chabad Shul?
Yeah, yeah. I go to the Bell Harbor Shul. It's Rabbi Mirbitz and Lipsker, who are both like pillars, both reaching out to the community and really, really like amazing mentors. And Zalman Lipsker, who's the rabbi's son with his wife Hana, she runs the school. She's the director. Like, they're so involved, and they really are. I feel very lucky to live here. Yeah, amazing. They're great people. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. And I also wanted to ask about your kids. So you have two teenagers, and I saw also that like you had a podcast, or I think it was a Zoom, about how to like raise teenagers, like when they're going through their hard stuff. Like, how do you instill within your teenagers like a love for Torah, or even a love for wanting to be religious? Because like, I rebelled big time when I was like 15. Oh my gosh, like I'm not jealous of what my mom had to go through, but like I really rebelled. And like, I wanted to know, like, from you, like, what's your experience with your teenagers?
So my experience as a teenager, and I rebelled too. I mean, I don't know how much you rebelled, but I definitely was a rebellious teenager. And it's interesting, because I mean, my kids, thank God, you know, are poo-poo-poo, very good kids. I think that, look, I'm not a parenting expert. I gave a workshop to teens on just managing teen life. I shared research. I shared stories from other teens who had been through difficult times and how they overcame their challenges, what they learned from those challenges. So this was more like talking directly to teens. When it comes to parenting, that's kind of like different. That's a different story. I'm definitely not a parenting expert. But I will say that what I've seen from research and from learning from parenting experts, that, you know, kids don't do what we say. This is in Edith Eger wrote a book called The Choice. So she said, when we interviewed her too for our podcast, she said, kids don't do what we say, they do what we do. And I think that one of the key components to, I guess, good parenting, but just raising kids who are passionate about the things you want them to be passionate about, is by being passionate about it yourself in a real and true way.
Yeah.
So if I tap into my love for Yiddishkeit, that's, I think, the most impactful way to have my kids be inspired and energized by that, as opposed to me like preaching to them, you do this and I'm not doing it myself. Now, there are exceptions, obviously, like, you know, there are certain things that I can do that my kids can't do yet. So I have to be mindful of that. But in general, I think that when they see I mean, I'll give you an example. My husband, he goes to shul, to Minyan. Like, he goes every morning. He davens every morning. He prays every morning. And he gets up with us. He goes with excitement. Like, he's not saying, oh, I have to go again. It's never like that. It's always like, bye, guys. I'll see you soon. And I see, like, when my kids leave to school, even, you know, okay, sometimes they're tired. But I kind of see that in them, which is very, very cool. So I would say, and it's such a great tool and tip. What I'm saying is, if you want to raise kids who are passionate, be passionate yourself. I mean, who wouldn't want to tap into their own passion? And, you know, like, obviously, right, each person has their own path and direction, but I really tried to see, like, the joy in Yiddishkeit, and it didn't actually come so naturally. Some of the rules were a little bit they were hard for me. Covering my hair was not an easy thing. You know, being restricted with what I can wear was not an easy thing. It still is not so easy. So that's my work. You know, I recognize that it's a process. Like, I do every Friday night. I set the table for Shabbos as though we're having guests, even if we're not. So it's always set. I do it out of respect for Shabbos. And I know a lot of people will, like, set the table differently when they have guests and when they don't, which is totally fine and it makes sense. But if I'm trying to instill in my kids a love for Shabbos, it has to be beautiful. And so I committed to doing that, and I do it, and it's some extra dishes to wash. I do have help, so that helps, you know.
Yeah, of course.
But that's the thing, is just to find, you know, why do you want your kids to be passionate? What is it about that is, you know, making you want that? So you need to know. By the way, I am kind of speaking to myself also. It's a process. You know,
yeah, of course, when you're speaking, you're reflecting, you're teaching yourself. So
yeah,
why is it important for you to be passionate about it?
It's a good question. So I think tradition, just for me, the bottom line is that tradition is really beautiful. It's knowing that we have this gift, you know, that was given to us thousands of years ago, that we've been able to keep alive. And no matter, and I, like, how many things are obsolete now, you know, you have all of these, even the cultures and religions and all of these, I mean, these empires that came and went, that rose, that they, you know, they just fell and they're no longer here. And I think that Torah is eternal. And to me, knowing that, like, 3,000 years ago, they were doing the same things we do today, that's inspiring. It's like, imagine you can deliver or give something that, you know, in 3,000 years from now will still be, like, it'll still be relevant.
Like, what kind of things do you think they were doing back then that we still do today?
Well, I mean, matzah on Pesach, you know, the that's just one thing. Because Pesach to me was always, like, an interesting holiday, because maybe more restrictions, which it's very hard to get ready for Pesach. And so it wasn't my favorite, let's just say.
Yeah. I get
so
it.
I tried to tap into the story. So at our Seder, it was COVID, so we couldn't go anywhere. We were home, and we acted out. My kids acted out the story. I don't remember which story it was. It was one of the steps in the Seder. They acted out whatever was going on. Maybe it was like Yetzias Mitzrayim, like the Exodus. And it was so funny. Like, we brought it to life. So we tapped into the stuff that inspires us about Pesach, as opposed to, like, what we can't do. We were focusing on what we can do and the cool things about it. So I would say the bottom line for me is tradition, is knowing that I'm carrying a legacy that's going to hopefully be around for a long time. And also being connected. I think being part of a community is a big part of it for me. You know, it's, and learning and growing.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Do you learn on a regular basis, like Torah?
Not really. I do. I try to do Chayenu.
What's that?
Chayenu is, so if I were to do it every day, the way I plan on doing it, and I hope to do this, then I would say, yeah, I would, to answer your question, I would say, yes, I do learn Torah. I would say I do, but not enough. It's kind of like, you know, I learn, but not enough, because I want more. I think I see the difference that it makes in my life. to be connected like that and to study. So yeah, do I learn Torah? I mean, it's a tough question. Yes and no. I do learn Torah, but I'd love to learn more.
Yeah. The reason I'm saying this, well, first of all, there's a really great program. It's called Partners in Torah. You choose a book that you want to study, and then they find you a partner from like anywhere around the world. And you both study it. And like, I've been doing this for the past, I don't know, half a year. I'm like learning the Guide to the Perplexed. It's so interesting. And like, even when I'm here in Miami, like it's all over Zoom. So it's really accessible everywhere you are. It's really amazing. And I think also like through learning Torah, you understand also why it's important to carry on like with what you're doing. Like I was just sitting in Shul on Shabbat reading the Parsha, and I was like thinking about like the whole story of like Yosef, and then like how Yosef ended up, you know, getting saved, and also the story of like Moshe, how like it all goes down like, and with like the smallest details of like how, you know, how we survive throughout the generations, and how like by the smallest miracle here led to that miracle here, to that led to that miracle here. Like I feel like it connects you more to your background and to your history, that makes you more appreciative to want to keep being passionate about it, you know.
Right. And that's for sure. And that's actually, it's interesting because this kind of brings a full circle, because we talked about having joy in the moments, you know, making each day meaningful. And that's really a big part of tradition, is every day you make meaningful by honoring the tradition that you were, you know, that you come from, the community that you come from. So that's what we strive for. That's what I'm striving for.
Yes. Well, I think you're doing a really good job. And I'm really excited to see what else you come out with your site and with everything you're doing, your books, your journal. Hopefully you'll add like the last three things in the end to your next journal that you come out with. Looking forward.
Thank you. This was a great conversation. Appreciate it very much.
Me too. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye.